Hey, it's Matthew Peterson. Welcome to the show. Today, we're just doing two segments, but two good ones, near and dear to the heart. First is new media. If you think about what digital media is, what does that mean for kind of the cutting edge of the future, the real future, long-term? Everything's all messy now. We're still in the beginning of, you know, the digital age. But I want to talk about some things that I really think are true, three different aspects of new media that are huge and that arise out of the nature of digital media, if you understand what it is. I don't think a lot of people are talking about it, so I think you might find it interesting. It might help you invest. It might help you just conceive of the future and what digital technology is, but that's the first segment. Second segment is who is in the new coalition. You know, I've done this before, but I'm going to keep doing it. I see four different groups that are coming together into a new coalition that breaks down old barriers, and you need to think about that as you move forward. If you want to persuade people, if you want to join this movement, if you want to push things forward, we want to revitalize civilization, restore an American way of life in the 21st century that's worthy of the name. We need to think about who's the audience. And too many people are stuck in like, oh, there's us versus them and this group and that group. And this is a broad coalition. And this is what I'm doing. We're going to put together a broad coalition to retake America. So I talk about the four different constituencies in the second segment. So the only way out is through. Let's get on with the day. Let's get on with the show. I want to just say a few words about the new media in digital world and kind of where things are going. We're very early on in the melting down of old things because of digital technology, the digital environment. We haven't really even grappled with what this technology is. Memory and retrieval, as James Polis and some others I know say and I've grabbed onto. I mean, what the technology ultimately is, digital technology, is the ability to encode, right? To memorize, it's memory. On grains of sand, you can encode whatever you want, what kind of information you want. So video and audio, text, whatever, you're encoding it. You're putting it into the silicon, the grains of sand, and then you're going to retrieve it anytime you want. And when you do that over time in combinations, like when you ask questions, you get AI, right? So it's not just static. You can instantaneously almost, right, ask these questions of the information that's encoded, and algorithms will combine it in different ways and pull out different aspects of what's encoded into the grains of sand. It's memory and retrieval, digital technology. That's ultimately what it is. So it includes video, it includes audio, right? It subsumes all of that within itself. And that is that has profound effects, profound impact, right, on human society and human institutions. And, you know, I could go on and on about this, but the point I want to make is, you know, why haven't you ever heard that before, what I just said? Digital technology is memory and retrieval. It's a profound point. It's definitely true. I think if you think about it, we can talk about it more. Why haven't you heard that before? Because we're stupid. Right? It's a retarded society. I mean, we don't think about technology in a serious way. We just adopt it and hurtle on and think about it afterwards. And this is, to a large part, in my mind, the intellectual right's fault. They just don't think about material things or real things very, very much at all. It's more like the mainstream contemporary thinkers used to think about this in a more serious way. In any event, the Academy is a crap show anyway. Here's what I want to say, though. What do you think about this? If digital technology is memory and retrieval, all right, this new world, new media world, and digital is bringing about will be more continuous chronicles of things over time and extended researches. My historical example, rather than what we have now, in other words, you'd have extended research, right? Or you have chronicles over time on the same theme of what's happening, rather than our ephemeral and random, you know, articles that just kind of appear. They appear in a paper every day, all over the paper, you know, throw the paper away, and the next day you get some more. it'll be more scribal, as James, as Polis says, than scribbler. It's going to be more scribal, more monastic. But it also involves a live looking glass. That's also key, where you just see everything instantaneously around the world. Like if you watch the riots like I did on Twitch, you saw the streams of everything coming through. And you could curate, right, the all-seeing eye, you know, all this live footage flowing in from around the world. Ultimately, you could see an entire, you know, stations, networks of curators of live feeds. Of course, the governments will always not want that to be the case, but that is also an aspect of the digital technology. So I want to talk about all three of these in the next few minutes. First, continuous chronicles. What do I mean by that? Well, if you think of a newspaper now, it's first off, especially a local regional newspaper. Are you kidding me? I mean, they don't send their best. They don't pay very well, and they're all falling apart, and they're not really doing their job. As opposed to a chronicle, one of the best examples of that is Matthew of Paris. A long time ago, medieval knew some of the kings and nobles because of where he was stationed, and in the UK. And if you read his chronicles, it's kind of part Drudge Report, like, you know, people said there was a dragon seen and blah blah blah, or there was an earthquake and a lot of people died. The disasters are in there, but it's also a continuous, you know, account of what's going on politically and culturally over time by the same guy. So it has a kind of continuity. Right, it's telling the story of a place, and that is something in a more conscious way than, say, a newspaper does. So, in other words, if you bring us back to the medieval, if you look at what digital technology might make possible as the old newspaper breaks down, it would be over time more like today a blogger talking about what's going on for real in the city government. What are the real issues? What are people debating? And over time, there's layers of articles, right? Entries, really, into the journal, into the chronicle, about what's going on. That's where we're moving towards at best. And I think we should consciously try to get there. Who cares about the random articles, right? Ultimately, like, if you want to know what's going on in a region, you want someone to be the scribe, someone to chronicle the story of it. And then there's extended researchers. Just real quick on the chronicles. The continuous chronicles, that are just solidifying, like, this is what happened. I mean, that very much correlates with the blockchain, right? With digital technology that allows you to record things that everyone sees and then are verified and that you can't mess with. So the idea of chronicling what's going on in a given time and place over time consistently, you know, entries into the logbook, so to speak. I mean, that correlates with the digital technology, correlates with blockchain. You're not going to get rid of it. Everyone can see it. It's verified, as we say, right? I mean, so that I think is very interesting. We should lean into that in a serious way. You would want to make someone in your community, and maybe a few people, or the scribe, the chronicler. Okay, second, you got extended researches. And I use that word in a cute way because Herodotus, the first historian, the father of history, as people would say, the Greek historian, his book could be translated researches. Like, he wandered around and told people what had happened in the past and told the story. I mean, history is a story. And if you're gonna have a future, you need to have the depth of the past behind you. We're losing our story, right? We don't agree on our story. Any historian who doesn't like to tell stories, I mean, isn't good at it, I don't really respect. It's hard for me to do it. They're probably just doing some pedantic crap then. Maybe it's important in some way, but they're not a real historian. A historian is looking at the story of a people, the story of people, and they're looking at this over time. And they're excited about it, and they can tell that story. Anyway, extended researchers are coming back, and in an interesting way, as the academy sort of atrophies, right, and just goes down the drain. And what do I mean by this? Well, you know, forget the old news, which was good in the sense that, like, everyone read it. It would have a big reach, the old news system in America. But it was not very in-depth, and it was full of propaganda that it got away with because everyone thought it was neutral, which, you know, is not reality. There's some things you can do to be objective, but, you know, it was never a neutral chronicler of, it's not possible, of what was going on. What you see now, and this is a good thing, because we complain about how shallow, I complain about how shallow things are, about how dumb people are, about how, you know, we've just gotten worse and worse. We're actually a primitive society dancing on the ruins of a once great civilization. Here's something that's good, though, right? Researchers are coming back, extended researchers. What do I mean by this? Here, I mean the podcasts, the rise of podcasts. You can see this. You have long conversations with people where you can't really hide. You can't just put out your TV from the TV era, your TV statement, which very much favored talking heads. You know, a lot of people who are just three brain cells that are all fighting each other, but they can go up and like an actor or actress and give a little talk that someone else writes for them. I mean, that's what TV made possible. That's what your idea of a great speech is, an actor or actress going up and reading something that someone else wrote. Any idiot can do that. And that's why a lot of politicians are idiots. So that's the era of TV. But now, you know, if you have to sit down for 3-4 hours with Joe Rogan and talk, you get a sense of who someone is, right? I mean, that is interesting. So with people, you see the extended researches, very interesting. Podcasts like this, right? I mean, I keep it an hour long when it's just me. I'm going to do interviews as well. But you know, people are actually interested in listening for longer periods of time. You know, my buddy Martyr Made, you know, Daryl Cooper, great, this guy, if you don't know Martyr Made, Daryl Cooper does great stuff, became big because of a thread he wrote explaining what people who were Trump supporters felt and why they thought the way they did. Tucker Carlson picked up on that. We published it in the American Mind as an article. Very interesting guy. But what he's doing is long, in-depth, putting together himself researches on different topics, whether it's Epstein or some matter of history. So that is coming back in an interesting way, and it's very much related to digital technology, both melting down old kind of forms of communication and media and allowing for new ones. So that's not a bad thing. Again, more scribal, you know, anyone can be the researcher who does the researches outside of the academy of the labels, and they can put that out there for everybody and everybody can latch onto it. And they are. I think Daryl said recently on Twitter he had 100,000 subscribers. I mean, he's got a lot of people who are paying because they appreciate the content. This is a sort of renaissance we don't talk about enough. We don't think about intentionally enough. You think about this larger scale. You know, how do we foster this? How do we categorize or bring together and curate a lot of this content? You know, this is the kind of stuff I think about. Curating this content is hugely important. Hugely important because you think about it's all out there. Like this podcast, you know, is out there. How would someone know though that this is the kind of thing I might like because I like this and that? Yeah, there's some algorithms that, you know, Apple and Spotify have, but we need, take Substack as an example. I mean, everyone's on Substack. If you don't know, it's basically like you can put up a shingle and write, and they'll take care of like people paying and subscribing and the newsletter for you. Well, there's a ton of people on there. How do I know they're aligned in some way or I'm going to be interested in what they're saying? There's a huge need for curation of with good taste and an understanding of what, you know, the deeper elements of this commercial cultural movement are. And when I say that commercial cultural movement, moving in the opposite direction from the radical ideology and an oligarchy of the Borg. So curation is big. For instance, people ask me all the time, and it's interesting, and I know other people who've had this happen. They know that if you're on Twitter and you follow the right people, you're going to be ahead of the curve. You're going to be in the conversation and know what's coming around the pike beforehand. But, you know, it's not even that they're lazy. They're busy. They don't want to be online. They're, you know, good people living good lives. But they've clued into like, oh, who do you follow on Twitter? Like, can you give me a list? And they're not wrong that if you follow the right people, you know, on Twitter, you can be, it's a very good thing to do. That's the real news feed you'd want if you wanted to just be in the game these days. But you got to know who to follow, right? So how would you curate that? How would you gather in, like, say, my feed or some other person's feed who's got some insight into the moment and then put it onto a channel, you know, put it on the wall and let other people see it? That's the kind of thing I think about a lot. Curation and credentialing is huge because it's not as if everything sucks and everything's crap. There's some good stuff out there. There's chroniclers and there's researchers out there who are doing interesting things. And, you know, we can put these pieces together to create the media of the future. Last thing on this topic, and I'll leave it at that. There's so much to talk about here. And it gets me excited because this is the world we have to build. Lastly, the live looking glass is key. Just because Twitch, which, you know, is live feeds, basically became like, you know, softcore OnlyFans after the riots. What happened, if you don't know, you know, they would show all these live feeds of people wandering around the riots. So it was incredible. You could see what was going on from the ground. It was some of the best, you know, quote unquote TV I've ever seen in my life, actually. And virtually no one's even written about this. I think about it a lot. After the riots, they sort of made sure that this wouldn't happen again, because gosh forbid, you don't want people, you know, seeing this live, what's actually happening in America. And then it just became like, girls in bikinis and whatnot. And I haven't looked at it in, like 2 years, a year. I mean, it's been a while. I don't think that there is actually anything out there that's doing anything interesting in live feeds in the way I'm talking about. I mean, there are smaller efforts, but nothing that's big. So what's interesting here is it's not in the interest, of course, of any one side to sometimes have people curating live feeds. But the idea of curating live feeds is fascinating. And it's a way of showing you the world as it is. And it's all about the curation. And I'll give you one example. I was telling the guys the other day, there was a night where I sat down during the summer of riots, drink in hand, as you do, as I was doing then. And I turn it on, and there's this guy who appears, and he's got a drink as well. And he puts his beer down, and then he goes up and starts like being the color commentary on four or five different riot feeds, which is fascinating to me, right? I mean, and he got a little bit better even as he, you know, was drinking. By the end, it's probably tailed off and wasn't so good. And in the beginning, he was sort of pretending to be an objective journalist. By the end, by the middle, you know, after two, three beers, it was pretty clear he was not on the side of the rioters. But he wasn't insane, at least the moments I saw of him. And what he would do is stop a feed and rewind it, right? I mean, he'd go back and say, what just happened here? He was giving you color commentary as news came in, right, from regular people's feeds. That is fascinating, right? I mean, can you imagine, right, being the curator everyone wants to listen to, because you stop what's happening live, you go back, just like you're doing a sports game, you're doing an NFL game. Like, let's look at the replay. What happened there? Okay, now let's go over here. It's like the NFL Network showing all the games at once. I thought that was fascinating. And it's something that, the live looking glass, mirror, mirror on the wall, I can see anything. There's always going to be a fight between that and the powers that be. But that is where it's at. I mean, if you had a new, you know, if you want to look at what the new news would look like, how do you recover, you know, local journalism or whatever? These three elements would be part of it. Live looking glass, curated of what's going on. And that could be 24/7 in different ways. Just like you have cameras that just, you know, you can just see the feed. And then you're going to have the chronicles over time. People who are actually chronicling information that matters over time. It can be data, right? There's a lot of data that matters regionally. But you're chronicling it over time. People ultimately will pay for that because it's valuable. And it unlocks kind of the story of the town. That'd be much more serious than the kind of news you see now at the regional, state level, or locally. And then the real scribe, the researchers, right, which is stuff people are paying for now, for, you know, the podcasters who are doing the work and are good at presenting information, doing the deep dives that no one else will do, the kind of the special, you know, the hour long special, if you go look to TV terms. So those three aspects are very much a part, I think, of the future, and they arose for me. Because I think I ended up getting some insight as I talked to smart people who are thinking about these things into what digital technology is, and that enabled me to, you know, sort of have this framework of thoughts. There's a lot more to say, but you know so when I look at you know, thinking about startup world or what would be successful in the future, you know, this is a framework that I think helps. And I think it could help shape companies in the future that will do amazing things and help really move the dial in a positive way to rebuild some kind of decent civilization in the midst of these ruins. I was talking about reframing a lot of the problems our society faces, in terms of just being a decrepit, primitive civilization. I mean, the family falling apart. The stupidity is one thing, which will return paganism and cults and so forth. That's already happening. We have a great image of a better image of ourselves than exists because the way in which we look at ourselves in the mirror is the media. And even though the media is sick and depraved, it also cleans things up a little bit so we don't see the pain, the suffering, the breakdown of the family and all that. But what I was saying in that other segment was, you know, we have to reframe that as civilizational health. It's not about social issues or you know, traditional morality. It's how do we have a healthy and fit civilization? And I want to talk today. I've done this before in one of the first episodes, but I need to do it every so often to remind people and to enrich my own thought about it. What this new coalition of people who care about rebuilding American civilization or an American way of life worthy of the name in the 21st century, you know, who are these people? What does this new coalition look like? Because it's not, you know, Republicans versus Democrat or right versus left. I don't even know what those things mean half the time anymore, even though I see the Republican Party as the only vehicle that we have to push against the madness. So I think it's important that you see that there's a realigning coalition that cares about rebuilding civilization or American way of life in the 21st century that's, you know, pro-Christian, pro-tech, pro-America. You know, you can't get rid of technology and change what's going on. You have to use it in a way that makes sense. So you can't just be a Luddite. You can't be, like my good friends in my background, a great booksy who just pretends, wants to suck the thumb and pretend, you know, it's going to go away. You got to be pro-tech. You got to be for innovation. Life moves on. How do we harness those things for the sake of a more human way of life? How do we use technology in a way where it doesn't enslave us, but it actually does empower us, regardless of the broken, you know, promises and lies of Silicon Valley? We can use technology in ways that are good to make our lives better, and we should. So I want to go through who cares about this and what does this new coalition look like? Because it's not going to be, I know a lot of people still think, well, you know, the problem is that on the social issues, my kids, if you're a little older, my kids, they just can't go Republican and they really are turned off by, you know, these social issues. I hear that a lot. But I think what you don't realize is the kids in their 20s are increasingly looking around going, social issues or religious beliefs, I don't even know what religion is, but this crap has got to change, right? Who's going to come together for this commercial cultural movement, which is in some ways socially conservative and also pro-innovation and pro-technology in a way that furthers human life, pro-human, not transhuman, pro-human. I mean, sure, there's things we can do to probably help the human body and mind, but it's pro-human, right? In the way, you know, Musk, Elon Musk, whatever else we can say about him, he's pro-human. That who's going to come together for this? And which is the only chance we have of saving ourselves. Again, I'm going to say it over and over again. Right now, I have four constituencies that I want to talk about. And you should be thinking about this if you're a leader, if you're just in regular life, This is what gives me hope, and I see this coalition coming together. First, you know, there are Christians who I want to call out as, you know, you need to get off your ass and think about how to rebuild all the cities on all the hills. There's a sense in which conservative Christians in America have been just trying to like fit in and you know, they want to change things for the good. I'm not talking about the cowards who go along with liberalism and change their religion accordingly. I'm talking about the people who really understand their faith, their church going, but they need to get off their duffs and act to rebuild the city on the hill here and now, both because it's a duty and their salvation is wrapped up with it, and for the sake of mere survival for themselves and their families. You know, this is really something that I want to go into in more depth and give talks about. I mean, the city on the hill, quote, I mean, it comes from Scripture. This is Christ saying, you know, you build the city on the hill right when he says you don't hide your light under a bushel. So your duty is to build the city on the hill. That's not American exceptionalism. That's what it means to live a Christian life. You should not be just in hiding somewhere, like I'll be the salt of the earth by, you know, not saying anything about my beliefs and hiding and slowly moving up the chain in this society. No, you should be banding together with other people and building the city on the hill, building something that's worthy of a civilization, something that's worthy of civilized humans, something that shows people the kind of life that should be attractive to everybody, someone that shows a healthy way of life and therefore attracts people. And when this phrase "city on the hill" was used in the founding of America itself, you know, it wasn't about, oh, look at us, we're city on the hill. It was a warning. It was a warning. Winthrop is saying, look, if you read that sermon, "City on a Hill," which is probably the only Puritan thing they still teach in many schools, and they rip on it, like, look, they thought they were really special, like a shining city on the hill. When in fact, and they thought they were exceptional and chosen by God. When in fact, what he says there is, we made. Think about this, Christians. Think about this. He said, we made a covenant with God when we came here, you know, to serve him and to unify ourselves together. And we are the city on the hill. And if everyone's watching us, to be the city on the hill means everyone's watching you. You know, they're looking at the light under the bushel that you're not supposed to hide. And what he says is that means that if we screw up, which is his whole point in bringing up the metaphor, if we screw up, everyone will know, and we'll be a laughingstock, and we'll be punished by God. And what I think is hilarious about this is, like, where is that now? I mean, where's that attitude now? Granted, it's not a Christian country anymore, but why don't people think, I guess it's not, the city on the hill is not doing so great, but, you know, that's not my fault, and I'm just going to try to get along and... you know, we can't move to some other place. It's weird to combine with other people who agree with us. And I mean, I would question your knowledge of your faith and Scripture. I'd say you need to question why you're doing what you're doing, because even just for the sake of survival, like, I know people who are not religious at all who are saying, what are your Christian friends doing? Like, what are they doing? They're all going to be, you know, this isn't going to go well for them. Can't they see what's going on in the world? And just for survival, you have to band together with other people with the same beliefs. Christians are now in a situation much more like Mormons and Jews are used to. And if you don't recognize that, you're going to lose it all. You're going to lose your kids unless you combine with people of like mind. This is serious now. You know, I don't know what to tell you. But the truth is, for the sake of your own survival, you will have to do this. If you look at what's happening to the laws in places like California and New York, you look at what's happening in the culture, you know, you better just... And the good thing about it is if you do that, yeah, nothing's perfect and people are always, you know, fallen and you know, both malicious and stupid. But at the same time, if you combine with other people, you're going to have a better quality of life, right? You're going to have a better quality of life. And so not only is it your duty to do this, according to the words of Jesus Christ, it's also what you need to do for the sake of survival. Rebuild the city on the hill, band together and create a decent way of life for yourself and your children and your posterity. So I think that attitude of Christian, and by the way, if you believe in this stuff, right, then why aren't you leading? This is what I mean by where's the city on the hill? Where are the Christian leaders?
who are unapologetic about what they believe and why what they believe, because what they believe, a lot of it when it comes to the moral stuff, isn't even just revelation. It's also just reasonable. It's looking at human nature. Where are those people who are leading in, you know, tech, say, in the sectors of our world, our economy, and our culture, that, you know, why aren't we leading? Isn't there a duty there to be excellent and to be that city on the hill and to shine forth? Where are those people? I know there's a lot of grifters and, you know, just idiots, and greedy people. Now is not a time to be quiet, though. Now is a time to band together and lead. If you really believe what you believe, then we would expect to have Christian leaders in politics, not people who are wringing their hands and, oh gosh, Trump seems like a bad person and blah, blah, yeah, yeah. But what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to lead us forward? How are you going to save civilization? Where are the prophets? I'd like to see one prophet out there lift their finger and condemn America from the Christian side and say, this is repulsive. What you have done is to completely violate that covenant. You have allowed, you know, all kinds of things to happen that are terrible, that are spiritually, I mean, demonic. All over the place we see this. Yeah, it's a spiritual, we just put out a video in the soul of America that Joe Biden wants to talk about. Yeah, let's talk about the soul. I know lots of people who aren't religious who believe in demons now because of what they see. It is demonic. They're not even religious and they're saying that. I don't hear Christians saying it. I don't hear them condemning the sins of America. If you believe what you say you believe, then why in the hell don't I hear more about the sins of America? Oh, well, the nation doesn't really matter, Matt. You know, Matthew, I don't really look at it. Have you ever read the Bible? Like, riddle me this. Maybe things changed in the New Testament, all right? But riddle me this. It sure seems that in the Bible, people are like, you know, you really want to get out if you're in an evil society, because at some point it all falls apart. And granted, God's not up there just like zapping people. You know, there's no justice in this world. It's not all perfect. But after a while, like, you get what you pay for. And if you do all these evils, your society falls apart and there's sort of a divine judgment. Okay. You know, maybe if you don't believe in providence or God or any of this and you're listening, just let it be an interesting exercise, right? Because you should expand your mind and think about what other people have believed for thousands of years. But right now what I'm saying is you can call these Christians to account because they say they believe in providence. They say they believe in all these things. But yet somehow America's not going to be punished for its sins. Everything will just work out in the end. Okay. It will just work out in the end. That's great. You know, that kind of complacency bothers me a little bit. If it was at all true that there was such a thing as providence, if it was true that, you know, there is some natural and possibly divine justice in this life every once in a while for going in the bad way, I would imagine that, you know, it's not looking so good for the future here. And I would want to think about, where do I want to live with my wife and kids and my family, and who do I want to be a part of, and what flag do I want to fly when it comes to whose side I'm on in the midst of this deep divide? You know, I'd like it to be known, like, I'm on this side and not that side. I do not believe in these things. I'm trying to live this way for these reasons. I'm going to help everybody, but I'm banding together with people of like mind over here. I kind of want him to know that. Do you? I wonder. I wonder if we believe in providence anymore. I really wonder that. So Christians need that kind of kick in the pants, because both in terms of their beliefs and, you know, their sense of duty, survival, they need to get off their duff and rebuild the city on the hill here and now. Okay. Second are elites. And what's hilarious is you would normally say, if I was really elite in this secular society, I would have turned off this podcast by now because of all this spooky spiritual stuff that I don't believe in, right? But we live in a world in which the richest man in the world and one of the most incredible businessmen in the world, who has the most interesting companies in the world, Elon Musk, is, you know, sits on the podcast of the Babylon Bee with a bunch of low-class Protestants, our friends at the Babylon Bee, and jokes around with them, and then sends to the Washington Post, you know, a one-word response once in an email. He said, give my regards to your puppet master. And then he goes for, you know, an hour plus on Babylon Bee. That's the world we live in now. Why? Because if you're aspiring or actually you want to be excellent, or you are actually excellent, like you have some, you have competency that you've honed over time, you have a disciplined mentality that has led you to develop skills and competencies, and you know you're excellent in various facets, and you're striving to become a better human in different ways, to be more, to be stronger, to be more powerful. But you know, this involves human excellence in a real way. It's not just, we're talking about actual excellence. If you are elite or aspiring in that way, if you want excellence and competence, or virtue, as we used to call it, over, you know, equity and decline, equity versus excellence, right? Equity means we're going to make everyone equal. We're gonna attack excellence because we have to equalize it, because all inequalities are evil, racist, oppression, or fascism, or whatever. If you realize that stuff is like the Musk does, the woke mind virus is not going to let you go to Mars. Then you gotta realign. You know, if you want excellence and competence over equity and decline, you must realign. If you want excellence and competence or virtue over equity and decline, you must realign. And that means finding people who agree in some form of human excellence and are not crazy utopians trying to build heaven on earth here and now. That's not what The City on the Hill is about, by the way. If it goes in that direction, it does become dystopian, but that rarely happens in Christianity. It doesn't even get that far, right? People are falling in a different way. But if you think you can make like heaven on earth now, you got problems. And that's the good thing about Christianity. If you aren't religious, but you want to join together with people who will make the world a better place, because Christianity thinks heaven, the perfection of justice and virtue and everything, is in the future, and that your soul lives on, that you live on. And then you have, you know, even friendly transhumanists who want to live forever and also realize radical ideologues trying to make heaven in the here and now are going to screw everything up for all of us. And they can actually join forces with people who are Christian, because there's actually a lot in common in terms of what needs to be done here and now and what we should be celebrating here and now. So an acknowledgement that, you know, strong civilization needs people who do respect and aspire to human excellence and creativity and innovation and goodness, truth, and beauty. You're not going to find that with a woke mind virus or these, you know, selfish, stupid aristocrats, oligarchs today. If you actually want to build something great, build something powerful, like, you're going to be there with the traditional Christians and the history of the West. So this is very interesting. Like, you have to realign yourself with a new group of people. Who else is in that group? The hope of the future is our red-pilled youth. These people are the hope. I never thought I'd see this, and I'm not that old, you know. But I thought. You know, I would never see this in my lifetime. But when I see people who see more clearly at 22 years old of what's wrong with the world because of how they grew up, they didn't have any, like, they didn't even have any kind of religion or conservatism or anything like that. That stuff, those isms and istics weren't in their head. There was no, like, negative or positive there. It's just empty. Their head is just empty because they haven't been taught hardly anything. But they're just looking at reality as it is. And the kinds of things that they're saying and seeing are so far beyond. Like, they're way, I don't even want to use, they're way more conservative. They're way more socially conservative than most, like, mealy-mouthed Christians because they see reality as it is. Now, they could go in different directions, but I condemn, again, the church for why you're not reaching these people. I mean, there's a bunch of young men who are like, I think I should probably get in shape, not look at porn, and reject this culture, which is all about ugliness, and try to find beautiful things and study, like, deeper truths. And they're called, you know, racist fascists in the media. They're, like, crying out, if you really believe in what you believe, for someone to say, yes, let me tell you more about this. And the church is nowhere on. They don't even know what I'm talking about. I mean, it drives me nuts. So Now, on the other hand, there are people who are Christian. There are people who are, you know, like put them in the category of elites, who realize that there's a lot of younger people who are on the ball and see something really true about the world. And these are kids who realize also that institutions are melting down, digital technology is changing everything, and they know. They know that the regular life of, oh, I'm going to try to be just wealthy, American, comfortable, that ain't going to cut it. And they know that there's going to need for greatness. There's going to be a need for great actions of great-souled men who do great things at younger and younger ages if we're going to save ourselves from the declining swirl of the ruins of this civilization going down the drain. They know it and they see it. And you know what? They just want to join something greater than themselves. They want to, I mean, the pitch is easy for them. It's save yourselves and your future. Join us. Let's do this. Newfounding.com. generally speaking, I'm speaking more generally. That is a group of people who we have hope in, we need to invest in, we need to bring together, and they want to go kick ass. They want to do it. They get it. It gives me hope, except for when I think about how we've treated this situation where no one even knows what I'm talking about. It drives me nuts. No one can say I didn't try. We're going to do this. The last group, and I'll shut up about this. The last group you could call regular Joes. These are men who've been kind of babied by the system. We all have some of this in us. I think these are people who, it's the largest group, it's up for grabs. They go different ways politically. A lot of people in America are pretty ideologically incoherent. You know, if you're a smarty or you're on Twitter all the time, you know, there's right and there's left and there's blah, blah. But most people, like, they have idiosyncratic beliefs, right? They're like, oh, I'm against abortion, I vote Democrat and I think X, Y, and Z about this over here. People are different. They have different views. It's all mixed up. I learned this. My favorite story about this is it's an old lesson for me way back in grad school days. I knew this beforehand because I'd worked a lot of crappy jobs and been around, moved around the country. But my favorite story to tell about the way in which Americans think about politics is not what people in D.C. think, is this. I was doing research on a city in Southern California. And we were collecting information about how the city works, basically giving an x-ray of the flow of power in the city. And beware of graduate students writing papers. They might have been making money like I was. So I go in and there's this my friend and I, and we're going to interview someone who we know knows a lot about the town. And she is she's a coffee shop owner. Like, she owns a little coffee shop restaurant in the center of town. So we know, like, this, she's a mover and player. And we walk in Southern California, it's out more towards the desert. And, it's got it's like hippie desert as soon as you walk in. It's got the crystals and, you know right away, like, this lady didn't vote for George Bush, right? So we sit down and she's kind of like, gives this vibe of, so glad to talk to people who are like from grad school. Everyone around here, is so conservative. I mean, that's what she's basically saying that in not so many words. Like, oh, I'm glad to talk to fellow liberals because I know you must be liberal because you're in a grad school. And all, I'm here in this place with these conservatives in this podunk place. And I'm like, okay, she's one of those. And we start talking. And the first question we asked about city politics, I was like, well, what's the biggest problem, you see with the city and the politics here? And she just said, Bush is terrible. I'm so glad that you guys are here. I'm a lib, you're libs, and we're all good. She goes, and we just kind of nodded our heads. She goes, the biggest problem with the city council? Like, oh my gosh, like, these idiots don't know how to run a business. I mean, the taxes are so high. They need to lower taxes. They have no idea. There's regulations. And she sounded like, a classic conservative. That's the way in which the majority of people think about politics and all this. And they're not consistently thinking about it, okay? So that's the way it is. So regular Joes, I would call this, like, these are the Joe Rogan listener types, They're the largest group up for grabs, and they can go in different directions. They have different ideas, but they're generally pro-American, increasingly turned off by the wokeness, although they're not consistently conservative. And, they're trying to figure it out, and they don't like to be, they're kind of small L libertarian. Like, they want to think that they're on their own side. They don't want to have to pick a side. You know, they want to watch football and enjoy their lives and say like, you know, they're all corrupt and, you know, politics sucks. And so they're kind of the group that's up for grabs. Now, what you notice now is those are people who they are pro-American. They understand some basic truths about what's, you know, what's gone wrong. But whoever reaches them and brings them in, and they're increasingly breaking right over since Biden, probably wins. And I think with that type, that's why it's good to say civilizational fitness or health, because that actually helps them understand what you're talking about when you say, you know, on the moral issues or the, you know, sexual issues or the family, you know, it's not like we're not like preaching a sermon here. We can, but we're describing like literally you're going to collapse if you keep on doing this stuff. It doesn't make you strong. It leads to, you know, weird trannies on mind pills. You know, abusing themselves and others. I mean, that's the reductio ad absurdum. That's where this is going to lead. That's the kind of thing. Like, you know, these guys are like, okay, you know, maybe you got a point there. Like, tell me more. Anyway, those are the four groups that I have in mind as a new coalition. It's not like fantasy. This is what I see coming together when I go about the country, when I talk to people. So you got the conservative Christians actually rising up in some way, even though I just berated them. Who are good people, who are competent people, who you want in your business, right? You want in your neighborhood. You want to live in their neighborhood. Who wants to live in their neighborhood? Well, a lot of people who are elites, aspiring or otherwise, right? You're from the big blue city. You want to get the hell out to the suburbs or a red state. And guess what? You want to be in their neighborhood. Good country people. Like, you want to be there, not the ones who are, you know, on drugs and suffering, but these Christian people who have their act together. That is Elon Musk of the Babylon Bee. And then who's going to join you and who's going to be the audience for this? Well, there's your red-pilled youth. There's your sudes online who are going, this is all, you know, dystopia. I like the way, you know, both of you guys think. I like the idea of excellence with Elon. I like the way the Babylon Bee pokes fun at these people and understands the moral problems and the deep problems of our time. And then watching all of that is increasingly a bunch of, you know, regular Joes who are going, yeah, no, I think I see what you're saying here. Like, I don't want the wokeness. I'm sick of them telling me what to do. And wow, you're making a point. You're making a point. And that is the kind of messy, you know, realigning coalition. It looks very different than how things looked in the past. Very different from how things looked in the past. So in any event, that is my rehash of the four different groups, or at least four groups. You can organize this in countless ways that I see as important in any new cultural coalition, commercial cultural coalition, moving things forward. And I think, you know, my hope is in laying this out. I mean, I'm giving you some of the secret sauce on this podcast, but my hope is in laying this out that it just gives you hope, that you start to think outside the old boxes, because you have to. It's not going to be the same. It already is not the same on the ground. And the old framework of right, left, Republican, Democrat, whatever, and how you were taught to think of it, just doesn't make any sense. Something like what I just said is coming out of an organic, you know, lived reality, as they say, like going around and seeing what's happening and talking to the new leaders and looking at what's successful and kind of the cutting edge. I hope that gives you hope. I hope it helps you rethink things in this time where a lot of people are just full of despair or you know, black-pilled out. There's a new coalition to build. And in order to do this, in order to put these pieces together, by the way, you got to think outside, you know, I have my subgroup and I'm right. Well, you may be right. Like, you and yours may be right, but you're going to have to work with other people. Like, so what's the coalition you're going to work with? You know, this is something like what I just described, I think, is the coalition. But, you know, agree or disagree, don't sit there and think like, well, it's just me and my tribe. Like, my, you know, my individual church of 500 people is right about everything. You know, whether you're right or not, you're going to have to work with others. All right. And you're going to have to find where are the points of overlap that matter to hold together a coalition that will actually fight to rebuild civilization, to revitalize culture in this moment here and now. That was a fun episode to record. I hope you had fun listening to it. If you want to contact me, at DOCMJP on Twitter, you know, give us a holler. More important, come with us if you want to live. You know, go to newfounding.com. You can become a member, support the show, and support our other efforts. Early adopters are going to have compounding benefits as we build the exciting things that we are building. And, you know, I want to encourage you to come aboard. It also, you know, liking and subscribing and reviewing and all that, it has like huge effects, right? It actually helps. So if you like the show, I know it's a pain. You're probably driving somewhere. It's the last thing you want to do, but it takes like 5 seconds. Just do it for me and move on with your life. You'll be free afterwards. So with all that said, remember to keep yourself sober, limber, and increasingly in shape, because we need you to conquer. We're not going to win otherwise. Have a blessed day.